arriving next to Vera and handing the unconscious boy back into her arms. I was sufficiently distracted with that motion that I just barely noticed when she pointed the dueling cane at my chest. "Don't move." My eyes narrowed. I strongly considered trying to grab the cane from her hand. My vest could probably take one more shot, and people had a tendency to miss charging targets at short range. But I'd never seen Vera miss. I opened my hands and stretched them out to my sides, a gesture of surrender.
"Why?"
"It's nothing personal. I don't know you, kid, but I've got to make sure my friend here is safe." Vera paused, grimacing. "I'm taking this way out. You can find your own way."
Vera made a gesture with her head toward the door where we had entered the room.
It was still there.
"Maybe you can explain things to the visage."
I gave her a look that was heavy with skepticism.
"That sounds real plausible."
"Sorry. Hate to do this, but I will fire if you follow me. This is bigger than you know."
I shrugged. "Do what you've got to do."
She nodded.
"Don't take this exit, even after I leave.
I hope for your sake that we never meet again, Corin."
"Not likely. When I get out of here, you're going toward the top of my figure this resh out list."
Vera inched her way out of the room, the kid still slung over one shoulder, the dueling cane always pointing at me. I considered rushing her right up until the point where she reached the pillar in the center of the next room, and the door slammed shut.
Resh. Only one thing to do now.
I looted the room. 5 more small crystals from the remaining destroyed monsters. They weren't much, but they probably had some value. I picked the sheathed sword back up, too. Rusted or not, it was better than nothing. Unfortunately, the sheath wasn't built with a loop to attach to a belt, so I had to carry it by hand for the moment. If Vera knew that the way she'd gone was an exit, can I just wait a bit longer and follow her? I knew that different exits led to different locations. Was she going to be lying in wait for me out there? Did she have contacts outside the tower that would cover her retreat? The latter was slightly more likely, but I didn't think either of them was going to happen. I still didn't take the exit, though. I had unfinished business. I found a clear spot near the exit door and unslung my backpack, finding the book. As I flipped open the pages, the room trembled. I dropped the book as the floor beneath me shifted, but I managed to maintain my footing. After a few more seconds, the shaking stopped, and I picked up the book. Fortunately, nothing had fallen from the ceiling, but I could see cracks in the walls. Was that an earthquake? No, ordinary earthquakes don't happen here. That was something moving. Something big. Can the God Serpent move outside of that room? I felt a momentary surge of terror, clenching my hands into fists as I pictured the God Beast smashing through one of the nearby walls. But quivering wasn't going to get me anywhere. And it certainly wasn't going to get Tristan the help he needed. I took a deep breath, unclenched my fists, and picked up the book. I wasn't done here. I found the last line I had written, and I found the reply.
"I will try. It is not my way, but I will try."
I frowned, uncertain, and lifted the quill to the page. I noted the distinct lack of a description for this room. Was the entity still watching me?
"Are you there?"
Seconds passed. No reply. I lifted my head from the book, frowning, to find that I was no longer alone. A hooded robe floated in front of me, with a pattern of white stars sewn into the blue cloth. The sleeves were outstretched, giving the impression of arms within, but there were no arms. No face was visible within the hood. Just empty air.
"You have made things very difficult for me, Corin."
I wasn't sure if the voice was coming from within the cloak or inside my head. It seemed to come from everywhere at once, but I was pretty sure I knew who I was talking to.
"Sorry about that."
I put the book and quill away.
"Mysterious book entity, I take it?"
"In a manner of speaking. This is not my true form, merely a manifestation of convenience. There is no time for deeper discussion. Come."
I stood, ready to draw the sword, but holding it downward in a non-threatening position.
The hooded figure moved to a wall toward the middle of the room. I followed, avoiding the traps on the floor.
"Press here."
I searched the wall, finding a small tile that stood out from the rest of the stone. A switch. Of course, most of the switches in the room triggered traps. I really didn't like this. I pressed the switch. I heard a click, followed by a grinding noise. A door-sized section of the wall slid into the floor. I nodded to the hooded figure.
"Thanks." "Do not thank me. This favor will cost us both."
Well, that was ominous. The room ahead was circular, similar to the one with the pillar. Instead of a pillar at the center, however, it had a basin filled with clear blue. There were exit doors on the opposite side of the room.
"Enter the room."
I stepped in, glancing around cautiously. The robe floated in beside me.
"This is a room of attunement."
I felt my heart pound in my chest.
"Drink from the water to be anointed and complete your test."
I didn't hesitate. This was one of my two goals for entering the tower, and I had already made as much progress as I could have hoped for on finding Tristan. Maybe this would give me the strength to do more. I laid my sword down next to the basin and dipped my hands into the water. It was cool, almost freezing, as I brought it to my lips and drank. My mind went blank. I saw only blackness at first, but I felt no panic, only calm. A woman manifested slowly in front of me. She glowed with a soft blue light. It was a cold light, colder than the water that flowed within me now, and it chilled me to my core. Her wings were brilliant white, reminding me of the soft glow on the blade of the sword that Karis wielded. Her expression was full of sadness as she reached for me, brushing her fingers across my forehead. "Awaken." I was back in the chamber. My forehead felt cold, the touch of her fingertips still lingering on my skin. I had no doubt as to what I had seen, what I had experienced. I was attuned. The robed figure remained next to me. It leaned down, lifting the sheathed sword in an invisible grip. I blinked, taking a step back. It paused.
"I am not going to strike you. I am merely retrieving a tool."
The cloaked figure unsheathed the rusted sword with an invisible hand and then thrust it into the pool of water. The entire blade and hilt sunk in deeper than should have been possible from the visible fluid. When the cloaked figure pulled its hand out, the weapon had transformed. It was an elegant saber, a blue gem shimmering in the pommel, the handguard a weave of silvery vines. The cloaked figure turned the sword to the side, offering it in two invisible hands. I accepted it with a mixture of confusion and awe, then resheathed it. I felt an aura of frost emanate from the weapon as I took it in my hands, but it was a soothing cold. The chill fought back the pain in my right hand from the overuse of my cane. "Thank you," I breathed.
"It is a meager gift, but the best I can prepare with limited time. You will need far more than this to survive the days to come."
"Because I opposed Katashi?" I might have expected as much. The creature's hood twisted, giving the impression of an attempt to shake a head that wasn't there.
"Because of what you have seen. You are one of several who have been pulled into a conflict with the potential for vast devastation. Seek the woman called Lyris Orden. Tell her that the voice of the tower must speak with her. You may tell her what you have seen, but speak to no one else of the prisoners. That will be the first of your tasks, to repay what you owe."
I nodded. "I take it you're this voice?"
"Yes. I know you wish for more information, but I must leave. A battle still rages, and even moments may make a difference."
I thought of Karis and Katashi. Was this voice going to go help one of them? I really wanted to know more, but I didn't know enough to question the voice's decision, and I believed that moments might be relevant. "One last question. My brother entered this tower and never returned. His name is Tristan. Do you know where I can find him?" The voice hovered in silence for a moment. The hood shifted downward just enough for me to notice.
I am sorry. Thousands come and go each year. I cannot help you.
Another chance lost. The tower shook, jarring me out of my thoughts.
I understand. Thank you again for everything.
The hooded robe vanished. I heard a voice in the air as it disappeared.
Leave quickly while you still can.
I stared for a moment at where it had been. Quickly was somewhat ambiguous, at least. I could take a few minutes. I knew that people were supposed to lose some of their memories of the tower when they left. I also knew they kept what they had found inside. I had a book and a quill. I hoped the voice wouldn't be too irritated if I used them for a more conventional purpose. The tower shook as I wrote the most important notes I could think of. Found prisoners and freed them. Tristan was not among them. One of them, Vera, betrayed me and fled with an unconscious child, not sure why. Another, Karis, is currently fighting with the Visage of Valor. Yes, seriously. He is doing surprisingly well, but from the shaking in the tower, I don't know how long he'll last. This book is connected to an entity called the Voice of the Tower. The Voice has instructed me to find Lyris Orden and tell her to talk to him. It? Anyway, that's a thing I need to do. Also, I shouldn't tell others about the prisoners. Katashi may want to kill me because of what I know and or because I helped Karis a little. This could prove inconvenient. The Voice doesn't know where Tristan is, but if there are prisoners here, there's hope. It's much more likely the goddess will return him if he's still alive. I finished taking my notes. I'd originally planned to record everything I'd seen in the tower, but the shaking was getting worse. I saw cracks forming in the walls of my room. The Voice didn't reply to my writing. Presumably it was busy. More shaking. Tiny pieces of masonry fell from the ceiling. Was there anything else I needed to do before I left the tower? I looked at the font where I'd gained my attunement, where the Voice had procured a magic weapon by trading in a terrible one. I really, really wanted to pour everything from my backpack in there. Somehow I doubted the goddess would appreciate that, though. I settled for emptying out my flask of water on the floor of the room and dipping it into the pool. I filled it to the brim. Would the goddess be offended by such a small thing? I hope not. The room shook again, a fist-sized chunk of stone falling from above and landing inches from where I stood. I'm going to hope that was a coincidence. Either way, it's time to go. I stoppered the water flask, put it in my bag, and moved with purpose out the tower doors. I was out of the tower. I took a minute to just close my eyes and breathe. I survived. It felt good to be alive. It felt even better to finally have some tangible progress toward getting Tristan back. It was going to be a long journey, but I'd finally taken a step closer to reuniting my family. Standing here isn't going to get you any closer, though. I opened my eyes. The sky was dark overhead, and I could see clouds gathering. Fortunately, I didn't have to worry about rain on the way home. The environmental shield that covered the city was barely visible from my vantage point, but I could see the telltale shimmer a few hundred feet up. I knew what rain and snow were intellectually, but I'd never felt them. Maybe I'd get a chance someday. For the moment, I had more important things to concentrate on. There were no guards next to my particular exit, which was a bit of a surprise. I knew I'd probably taken a non-standard route through the tower, but I still expected to be escorted by guards to a nearby celebration area as soon as I finished. That was standard procedure, as I understood it. I could see the tall celebration tents in the distance, and a couple people gradually approaching them. I took another minute, gathering my thoughts and checking the contents of my pack. At a glance, everything was still there. I still had the sword with me, too. The book's writing remained intact. Good. It took me a moment to realize that I remembered writing in the book, and I knew why I was checking it. My memories hadn't been erased. Not yet, at least. Was it because I had taken a non-standard exit? Or perhaps because the Voice had helped me somehow? I wasn't sure, and I certainly wasn't going to tell anyone. Not yet, at least. I took a moment to draw a crude map of the rooms I'd explored in the tower. Just boxes with a word in each to show what they represented. I'd write more about them later if I could, but I didn't think the map would help me much for a couple reasons. First, the tower was always changing. Even if I walked in the same door, it was likely I'd end up in a completely different place. The connections between rooms would change, too. Second, and more importantly, I couldn't go back in through the same gate. The Gate of Judgment could be used precisely once per person. Next time I entered the tower, I'd have to use one of the other, far more dangerous entrances. The ones designed for climbers who were intent on reaching the top of the tower. If I wanted to survive going into the deadlier parts of the tower, I'd need to learn how to master my attunement. Even Vera, who had an attunement that wasn't built for combat, had proven that she was vastly more capable than I was. I couldn't have possibly survived that Spire Guardian room without her, and that was just a single room on the first floor. Now that I'd completed my judgment, my highest priority was to train, to study, to get stronger. And when I was ready, I'd start climbing to the top to save my brother. I decided that I'd eventually try to write up my notes on the tower rooms and publish them for future tower entrants. I wanted to do anything I could to try to prevent others from failing their judgments. But for the moment, I had far more pressing concerns. I'd seen a lot of flashy magic over the years. My father and mother were both expert combatants, and I'd seen both of them absolutely demolish people in structured combat tournaments. But neither they nor anyone I'd ever met had a fraction of the power that Katashi did. Visages could, and had, leveled cities. It was very likely that what I'd seen in his battle with Karras was just a fraction of his power, probably to prevent collateral damage. If I'd just made him angry, I was in very serious trouble. I headed toward the celebration tent, but I didn't feel much like celebrating. There were two soaring wing guards at the entrance to the tent. They gave me cautious looks as I approached. One of them, a woman with a blue attunement mark glowing softly on her right hand, gave me a hard look. "Where'd you come from?" I pointed at the exit where I'd emerged. "Huh! Haven't seen anyone come out of that gate in years." She narrowed her eyes and then waved her rune-marked hand over my forehead. Looking at her partner, she said, "It's real? He's attuned?" The other guard nodded, turned toward me, and gave me a friendly slap on the shoulder. I winced. That wasn't much for physical contact, but I tried to give him as pleasant of a smile as I could manage.
"Congratulations, kid. You should go get yourself a drink. If your test was anything like mine, you probably need one. And don't let anyone hassle you about your attunement."
What's that supposed to mean? It occurred to me that I hadn't actually checked which attunement I'd picked up. I didn't exactly have a mirror.
Thanks. I turned my head from one guard to the other. "Can I go in?"
"Oh, of course you can. Gotta make sure you fill out your papers before you leave, too. That's in the back."
The woman gestured toward the back of the tent, where I could see some tables stacked with paperwork. Bored-looking adults were manning the tables, giving instructions to the teens my own age, sitting or standing nearby. In the middle of the tent, though, people were celebrating. Newly attuned teenagers were dancing, carousing, and some looked to be having their first taste of alcohol. I stepped in, looking around.
"Congratulations! Need a drink?"
An older teenager holding a tray of wine glasses lifted it in my direction, but I shook my head.
"Not much of a drinker."
Belatedly, I added,
"But thanks."
The teenager nodded.
"Suit yourself!"
I continued to make my way in, bypassing the celebrants and heading to the back tables. Some of the adults turned toward me. One of them pointed, and another stood and approached me. She was a heavy-set woman, maybe in her 30s or 40s, beaming a bright grin at me. I did my best to smile in return, but my best probably wasn't very good.
"Hello, and congratulations! I see you just finished your attunement. You're welcome to join the celebrants for a bit before you sign your papers, if you'd like."
I shook my head.
"Thank you, but I'd rather get this over with."
Her smile diminished by a fraction, but she maintained a cheerful tone.
"Of course, of course. I'm Professor Edlin. From the look of that mark, I'll probably be seeing you in my classes in a few weeks."
I absently brushed my fingers against my forehead.
"Oh, great. I'm Corn Cadence. I haven't actually seen my attunement yet." I took a glance at her own attunement, the one she had visible anyway. I did notice she was wearing a glove on her right hand, and, of course, her clothing could have covered other marks as well. It was a shaper mark, like my father's, but less complex. I'd seen several variations on each attunement mark, but they always had a core symbol at the center that looked the same. I didn't know enough about how attunements worked to understand the variations yet. She raised an eyebrow.
Cadence? As in house cadence?
I nodded silently.
Oh, dear. Well, you should come have a seat, and we'll get you sorted out.
That wasn't a good sign. I followed her to a seat at one of the nearby tables, trying to ignore the looks that followed me from both newly attuned and adults. The professor slid a group of papers in front of me, but I didn't look at them immediately.
What's this all about?
Professor Edlin gestured at the papers.
Your enrollment paperwork for the Lorien Heights Academy of Arcane Arts. As you're probably aware, all newly attuned are required by law to serve 2 years at the academy.
I nodded, followed by 2 years of military service.
Largely correct, although their subsequent 2 years can also be spent in other approved government roles, such as tower expeditions. Only Lorien Heights can provide you with the education you will need to properly utilize your attunement.
Of course, because it's the only option available to me. Every kingdom treated attuned differently. In Kaelford, they had only a single year of mandatory university training, after which students were generally given apprenticeships. Their focus was on attunement-augmented manufacturing, developing both advanced military technology and everyday conveniences that were improved by attunements. In the Edrian Empire, attuned were sent straight to the military, where they served for a minimum of 6 years. From my understanding, that duration was often extended, either at the behest of the attuned or by the will of the Empire. In Delanos, attuned were sent to serve the Church. Of course, the Dalen military also served the Church. Delanos was a theocracy, so many attuned still ended up with military-style training. Velia had the best deal as far as I was concerned. I only needed to sign away 4 years of my life, not all of them. Of course, the nature of the attunement was also relevant, and I still didn't know mine.
Can I ask which attunement I have?
I made a little gesture, pointing at the mark on my forehead.
Oh, of course, dear. You have the Enchanter attunement.
I winced. If she noticed, she didn't give any sign. She just continued talking.
The Enchanter attunement will allow you to create magical items and manipulate existing items. It's very valuable for the development of new technology and providing useful tools to other attuned.
But virtually useless on its own. It was the diametric opposite of my family's traditional attunement, the Shaper. One designed for overwhelming personal combat ability. I spent the following hours nodding absently to the professor's instructions while I signed away 4 years of my life, knowing that the mark on my forehead might have ruined many more. The hours I spent on the train ride home were a stream of nervousness and self-deprecation. I'd faced several colorful death options earlier in the day, but none of them were as terrifying as what awaited me at the end of the railroad. Home. Disembarking at the Hastings Valley Station, I opted to walk the remaining 2 miles with calculated slowness. I could have hired a carriage, but I hoped that a sufficient delay might allow me to arrive after others had already gone to sleep. No such luck, of course. Cadence Manor was a beautiful structure, 3 stories of pristine white wood and stone surrounded by 3 layers of gates, a high stone wall, a barrier of hedges, and an inner metallic fence. The innermost and outer gates were etched with runic wards with a broad variety of functions, and the house itself was similarly protected. There were no guards outside, but the house itself could withstand a siege. At the moment, Cadence Manor's most remarkable characteristic was the man standing in front of the house's open doors. Tall, athletic, and dressed in the long white coat with blue markings of House Cadence, he was the perfect image of a nobleman in his prime. His black hair was trimmed fashionably short, showing streaks of silver along the temples.
His hands rested comfortably on a long cane that I knew contained a metallic blade. My father. His gray eyes analyzed, scrutinized, and calculated as I approached. His position in front of the doors was deliberate. Everything he did was deliberate. People like to say that Magnus Cadence was the type of man to think 5 moves ahead of his opponent, tracing 12 paths of undoing his enemies before they could lift a hand. People were often wrong. Magnus Cadence didn't plan 5 moves ahead. He didn't need to. He would never let an opponent make 5 moves. I held my back high, brushing a lock of hair away from my forehead, revealing the glowing mark on the skin. He'd made his opening move with his position, and now I'd made mine. We were about 20 feet apart when he acted again.
So, you failed then?
4 simple words that changed the nature of the contest. This was no game of tactics, pushing pieces on a board. He'd taken a lunge straight for the heart, just as definitively as if he had drawn the true steel in his hands. It was a feint. I shrugged a shoulder, trying to appear unaffected. I'd call it more of an incremental victory. A deflection, not a riposte. If I had attempted a counterstrike, he would have used my momentum against me. He'd drawn blood with those words, but it was only a graze. Father waved a hand at my forehead with a nonchalant gesture.
I'd hardly call wearing a coward's mark any sort of victory, incremental or otherwise.
A swipe at the knees, an attempt to catch me off balance. Any mark is power, and I can earn more in time. Moreover, I learned some valuable information about the tower during my visit, which will serve to improve my ability to climb in the future. A successful evasion, followed by a press of blades, mine against his own. Father quirked an eyebrow, giving the slightest bit of ground.
How did you learn anything? Your memories of the judgment should have faded by now.
I smiled, taking the opening. I wrote notes while I was inside the tower, Father. A simple enough exercise, but effective. Moreover, I made contact with an entity tied to the tower itself, a potential information source.
I suppose you have some of my blood in you after all, then.
An unexpected concession on his part, giving ground.
Inadequate, unfortunately, to compensate for your failure to win a combat attunement. You can come inside and meet your replacement.
There is no fencing term I'm aware of for drawing a pistol and shooting your opponent in the face, but that was what it felt like when I heard his final words. I'd overextended myself, and he'd taken advantage of that, giving me a taste of victory just to crush me with overwhelming force. He turned his back, striding into the house, leaving the familiar doors wide open. I followed, trying to avoid fixating on the sense of inadequacy he'd awakened in my mind. It was no use. The sense intensified as I saw who waited me inside. Standing with her hands folded carefully in front of her was Sarah Shard, my childhood companion. She stood in the center of the entry chamber, her bright House Cadence uniform illuminated by the gas lamps on the sides of the chamber. Sarah, the daughter of one of my mother's retainers, had been born a scant handful of days after I had. We had been raised together with the understanding that she would be my personal retainer, not a servant. Sarah was trained to be my bodyguard, my seneschal, and my closest confidant. My childhood was filled with memories of countless hours spent with her and Tristan, days filled with joy. I'd been raised with numerous stories about the bonds of loyalty between a noble and their retainers. I'd seen them in practice between my mother and Sarah's mother. They were always together, closer than any friends I'd ever known. When the tower took Tristan from me, my mother took Sarah. Mother had taken her entire staff when she left, and of course, Sarah had left with her own mother. I was no child now, and seeing my father approach Sarah, I processed things I had not as a 10-year-old. A similarity in the grayness of their eyes, a similar wave in her black hair to one in my own, the distinct absence of a father in her childhood. I anticipated Father's next move, but it was irrelevant.
Corin, I take it you remember the young Miss Shard.
He stood to her right side, smiling magnanimously as he gestured toward her. He didn't wait for me to reply.
Given Tristan's continued absence and your failure to secure a combat attunement, I've decided to legitimize her. Unlike you, Corrin, she's earned a real attunement. She's a summoner.
A summoner? That's impressive. They're rare and extremely effective. I did the only thing I could, since replying directly to him would only invite more attacks. I closed the door behind me, approached to an acceptable distance, and bowed at the waist towards Sarah.
Congratulations on earning a summoner attunement, Sarah. It's good to see you. It's been too long.
She didn't return the bow. Instead, she smirked and spoke.
Thank you, Corrin. Or perhaps brother would be a better term now?
Shining eyes flickered with mischief. Father turned his gaze toward Sarah.
I wouldn't get ahead of yourself, dear. I've legitimized you as a member of House Cadence, but I have not declared myself to be your father. Not yet. That is something you will need to earn.
If she was daunted by that, she showed no sign.
Of course, Father. I will endeavor to be the very best example of what this house has to offer.
Goddess, I'd forgotten how good she was at pretentious resh. I couldn't have come up with something that haughty with a calculated effort. Father set a hand on the top of her head.
I expect nothing less.
It was a small gesture of affection, just enough to show what he never gave to me.
I stretched, attempting to appear unaffected. Excellent. Maybe we can begin by sharing stories about our experiences in the tower.
Stories which she presumably wouldn't have, since normally people had their memories erased. It was a cheap shot.
She turned her head to me, still smiling.
Oh, I'm sure we'll have plenty of time for that at the university.
You look exhausted, Corrin. You must have had a difficult time of things. Is that a burn mark on your tunic?
I shrugged. If she thought that taking a hit implied weakness on my part, I could use that.
Oh, it's nothing. Just a blast from a dueling cane in one of my first battles.
Father turned, scratching his chin.
Wish you fled, I take it?
I scoffed, which seemed to catch them both off guard.
Oh no, not a chance. I didn't run from any monsters.
Mostly true. I only fled from people. And beings of godlike power.
Okay, and the cat-rabbit thing. So adorable.
Father's eyes narrowed, showing a bit of legitimate contemplation. Had I given him a hint of doubt?
You fought monsters, and yet you have a non-combat attunement? I find that somewhat difficult to believe.
Good. I shrugged the backpack off my shoulders, opening the back and reaching in. I retrieved one of the larger crystals that had been left behind when Vera destroyed the Bargenzi. It was common knowledge that monsters in the tower left crystals behind when killed. They were a form of stable mana and could be used in some spells and enchantments. Some people believed that they were the crystallized souls of the monsters. I tossed the crystal to him, and he caught it deftly. A slight frown developed as he turned the crystal over in his hands.
Curious.
He raised his head toward me. I showed him a handful of other crystals.
If you think that's impressive, you should see the sword.
I tapped the hilt of the weapon at my hip. Father didn't take the bait. Instead, he turned to Sarah and handed her the crystal.
You'll need to retrieve something more impressive than this on your next trip in the tower.
She nodded curtly. I set my backpack on the ground, folding my arms. Apparently, I was setting the low, low bar for being considered a child of Magnus Cadence. Father probably expected me to fight back, to compete, to try to prove myself, and for Sarah to have to try harder to measure up to that. He'd never understood. His approval had stopped being important to me the moment he'd written his elder son off as dead.
Well, this is all very exciting.
I tried to sound as unenthusiastic as possible.
But as you both made it clear you understand, I'm an exhausted coward who wants nothing but luxury, so I'm off to bathe and bed.
I gave Sarah one last look as I walked past her. Her expression had shifted from playful to contemplative. I gave her an exaggerated wink. I wasn't going to compete with her for Father's approval, but that didn't mean I couldn't find a way to make this into entertainment of my own.
Chapter 5 Orientation. I had a couple weeks between earning my attunement and the start of the academic year, and I intended to make good use of them. My first matter of business was trying to figure out how to use my attunement. We had a number of books on attunements in the library. Unfortunately, we didn't have many on enchanting. To the best of my knowledge, I was the first enchanter in the family. That wasn't exactly an honor. We'd made our family name in battle, not as crafters or merchants. From what I could glean from the more general texts on attunements, most people could use their attunements intuitively. If I was a shaper or an elementalist, I could already be hurling bolts of raw mana. According to a book called Styles of Spellcasting, the methodology would depend on where I received my mark.
Hand marks are the most common, which begat our tradition of wearing gloves to hide them. Those attuned with hand marks excel at accurately directing spells at distant targets. Leg marks allow for instantaneous delivery of powerful spells through physical contact. They are favored marks for guardians and other physically adept attunements. Heart marks can channel mana through the entire body before dispersing it through a spell. This requires intense focus and slows the casting of the spell, but increases its intensity. Lung marks allow the attuned to fill the air with mana as they speak the words of an incantation, directing their spells across a broad area. They are exceptional in large confrontations, such as siege warfare. Finally, mind marks enhance the attuned's ability to sense and manipulate the mana inside their body. This can potentially allow mind-marked to construct spells inside their own bodies purely through focusing their minds. This is an excellent attunement location for menders who can heal themselves simply through concentration, as well as shadows who can use it to cast illusions without any warning.
That description made my own mind-mark sound pretty interesting, until I read a bit further and found out that enchanters could only enchant items, not people. That was disappointing. I'd been looking forward to permanently enhancing myself somehow. Maybe an enchanting specific book would give me a better idea of what I could do. I did pick up a few more things about enchanting from the few books we had, but not enough that I could actually practice it at home. They were more about theory and history, written mostly for non-enchanters who wanted to learn about the basic concepts. That was frustrating. Whenever I walked by Sarah's room, I could hear her practicing some kind of spell incantations, presumably already mastering her summoner abilities. Occasionally, I'd even see an icy glow emanating from her room or see water dripping down the side of her door. Aside from studying my attunement without success, I had another thing to research, the symbol on the glove I'd found on the body in the prison. That, fortunately, was simple enough. We had a book on heraldry, and it was one of the first entries, House Cornell. I wrote them a letter explaining what I'd found, apologized for my failure to save their child, and enclosed the glove. I left the letter anonymous and paid a courier to deliver it. I gave the courier explicit instructions not to identify me as the sender. It was a coward's approach, and I knew that. They would have questions. Perhaps they'd be angry at me for coming back alive when their child did not. Maybe they'd want to thank me for giving them some closure. Maybe if my mother had received a letter like that one about Tristan, she'd have stayed with my father. Or maybe it would have just made things worse. All I knew was that the uncertainty of Tristan's fate had eaten me inside for years, and I wouldn't condemn another family to that same condition if I could avoid it. Maybe I was a coward. But a coward's gift was better than no gift at all. Before I left on the train to the Lorien Heights Academy, I spent one last morning sitting in a grassy field where Tristan and I used to play, and I remembered. He was tall, so much taller than I was, taller than our father even at 14. At 9, I hadn't quite hit my growth spurt yet. With his long, thin limbs, climbing the tree must have seemed like a trivial effort. To me, it was an exercise in terror just to scramble up to the lowest branches. "Come on!" I looked around uncertainly. Inside the house, Sarah was playing a game of valor against Father again. Lately, she was even starting to win a few rounds here and there. Mother was out on business again, and our other retainers were all inside, tending to various chores. There was no one nearby to catch me if I fell. Tristan was already a good 10 feet above me, high enough that looking up at him made me feel sick. Could I survive a fall from that height? Maybe hitting the branches on the way down would slow me enough that I'd just crack some bones open. But he smiled brightly at me, encouraging as he always had been, and I fought past the fear. My arm muscles were pretty strong for my age. Even then, I'd spent a lot of time practicing with weapons. Mostly the traditional ones, like sword and spear. I didn't have enough mana at that point to use a dueling cane with any degree of seriousness. So, pulling myself up wasn't a problem. It was just a matter of being able to reach a good branch in the first place. Tristan waited for me as I inched, calculated, and feared. And finally, I reached and pulled my way up to the next section of the tree. And the next. My fear grew with every inch, but he bolstered me with encouragement. "You can do it!" and "Don't be afraid!" echoed in my mind. I was just one section below him. I judged the distance.
"I can't make it! It's too far! I'm not tall enough to reach the branch!"
He laughed and reached down with a hand.
"Then I'll help you!"
I reached up to take his hand. With Tristan's help, maybe I could reach. Tristan leaned forward too far. His hand brushed against mine as he fell. I winced, blinking away the memory. Tristan had been fine. He'd laughed when I'd finally made it back down the tree, fighting fear to scale my way down far faster than I'd gone up. The branches had bloodied him, but he'd made it through the fall without any permanent damage. But I remembered that he'd fallen trying to help me, and that was Tristan to his core. He was always trying to lift me up, even at his own expense. After so many years of Tristan looking out for me, it was long past time I did the same for him. I knew that I wouldn't be going back into the tower immediately, of course. Attempting to climb the tower was far more dangerous than simply going through a judgment, and what I'd seen inside had made it abundantly clear that I was not prepared for the true dangers of the tower yet. So, I'd need to be patient. I'd practice. I'd master my attunement, grow strong enough to survive. But when I was strong enough, I'd reach for that highest branch. I hoped that Tristan could keep waiting for me just a little bit longer. Riding on the train was a considerably different experience with Sarah sitting next to me. It wasn't the first time we had traveled together. We had rarely been apart as children. 3 years apart had changed both of us, however, and my father's plans, maybe our father's plans, had been deliberately formulated to create a degree of tension between us. I wasn't going to let things stand that way. When we'd first left the station, she'd sat with perfect poise, looking out the window and waving at the house servants that stood at the station. The perfect image of a young noblewoman already missing her family and friends. Within minutes, she'd shifted in her seat into something resembling a ball, curled around a book. This was the Sarah that I remembered. Someone I could work with. I pulled out a book of my own. Trials of Judgment, the book from inside the tower. Then, flipping to a blank page, I removed the quill and inkwell from my backpack. I caught her eye flickering toward me, curious. She caught my eye catching her eye. I caught her eye catching my eye. You get the idea. We exchanged glances, saying nothing. I began to write. O great mysterious book entity, voice of the tower, etc., etc. Are you receiving this message? I'm not sure if this thing works now that I'm outside the tower. Really, I'm not sure if the book itself was ever significant or if you were just using it as a medium to communicate with me. Please clarify. Yours in an unspecified amount of indentured service, Corin. I smirked, waiting and watching for a few minutes. In spite of my brilliance, there was no reply. I sealed the ink container and stashed it, the quill, and the book back in my bag. Sarah glanced at me again as I finished putting the book away.
Magic book, I said simply.
I knew of no reasonable creature who would not respond to a nonchalant declaration like magic book. Sarah was a complex companion, I knew, but eminently reasonable when such hooks were presented. Her eyebrow raised accommodatingly, and for emphasis, she added, "Define magic book." I shrugged, stretching.
Oh, you know, just your typical book connected to a nigh-omniscient spiritual entity contained within the Serpent Spire.
What are you reading?
Hardigan's Complied Treatises on Advanced Binding Theory.
She retrieved the bookmark from her bag, set it to mark her progress, and closed the tome.
Nothing that would be applicable studies. It's for summoners.
I nodded sagely. Studying early? Well, I certainly wouldn't want to interrupt that with something as uninteresting as... She uncoiled herself and leaned in closer.
No need to be so blithely manipulative, Corin. You've got my attention. Now what percentage of that was actually true?
I looked upward, and then tilted my face down, giving an exaggerated look of concentration. 79.9%. She laughed obligingly, grabbing toward the book.
Okay, come on, show me.
I showed her the book, and she sat a little closer while I went over each of the pages, telling her bits of the story that went along with each. I stopped just before the prison, after the book told me that you shouldn't have done that. It was a good place to hook her interest, and beyond that, I was pretty sure I shouldn't be sharing the incidents with the prison and beyond, and certainly not in public. I really wanted to tell her about Karis fighting Katashi. The idea that there was a presumably mortal swordsman that could even hold a visage at bay was almost unthinkable. I'd been raised to believe the visages were unstoppable forces of nature. Everyone had. Was Karis an exception? Was he truly that powerful? Or was he another visage himself? Wid, the visage of forbidden knowledge, was known to take on many forms depending on her current whim. Maybe Karis, being another visage, was a simpler answer than assuming he was a human with some kind of unknown power source. But even if it was a simpler answer, I didn't know if it was a better one. Two visages fighting each other was potentially more worrisome than a human managing to put up a fight. Some kind of infighting among our pantheon could not possibly be a good thing, and it probably wasn't something a mere mortal should know about. And Katashi knew that I'd seen the fight. Even if he didn't take direct action against me, there was a good chance I'd be in danger if I went back to the tower before figuring this situation out. And there was a chance he would do something, even if it wasn't personally. Every visage had human agents, priests, servants, that sort of thing. Just one more thing for me to worry about. I also wanted to tell Sarah about the prison, both out of excitement and because I wanted to get her insight. I liked to plan for every contingency, but Sarah had always been great at breaking down a situation into component parts and analyzing them. Maybe she would pick up on hints that I hadn't, and I needed all the information I could so that I'd be better prepared to rescue Tristan when I was ready to climb the tower. In spite of my desires, though, I needed to play it safe. The voice had been clear that I wasn't allowed to tell anyone else about the situation. It had probably saved my life by giving me a quick way out of the tower, so I owed it at least a bit of consideration. I'd still probably tell Sarah eventually, but I wanted to see what this Lyris Orden had to say before I took any further actions. Instead, I asked her how she would have handled the same tests, and we discussed and debated alternate strategies for each room for hours. By the end of the trip, we might have almost been friends again. Sarah and I stood together on a broad, grassy field. We were joined by a mere 8,000 other students, mostly other applicants who had survived a trip through the tower. There would be a few others, foreign students with other attunements, a scattered few students who hadn't taken their judgments yet and were here to prepare. The sea of teenagers stared at a raised stone platform where several adults in the pristine white uniforms of the Valian military stood. We'd be hearing their commencement speeches shortly. In the meantime, Sarah and I were scanning the crowd, presumably for similar reasons. I was looking for known quantities, such as my few friends or acquaintances from social gatherings. Allies, enemies, the crowd was thick enough that I had little success. I thought I caught a glance of Patrick Wayland, one of my childhood friends. That gave me some conflicted feelings. I hadn't seen Patrick in years. Would he think less of me for having a weak attunement? Not everyone treated non-combat attunements as inferior, but it was hardly an uncommon attitude. Velia's military was our pride, and being able to stand on the front lines and fight with magical power was a common childhood dream. It had never been my dream, but I'd never been great at fitting society's expectations in general. Sarah and I were both still wearing our backpacks, and I still had the goddess-given saber on my belt. About 1 in 3 of the other students was armed. I'd initially expected my weapon to be taken at the academy gates, but the military had a strong presence on the campus, and the gate guards didn't seem the least bit bothered by the sword's presence. Most of the other students didn't seem to have backpacks, although I spotted a few in the crowd. Maybe the majority of students had already found their dormitories. Sarah and I just barely arrived in time for the commencement speech.
"Students, welcome!"
The sound was clear and crisp, like it was coming from right next to me, but I could see the speaker at the center of the podium. He was a tall, uniformed man with rich brown skin and a marvelous jagged scar across his forehead. It made him look ferocious. I was mildly envious.
"I'm Lieutenant Commander Jack Bennett, the Vice Chancellor of this institution. First, I'd like to congratulate you on getting to this point. You've shown a degree of worth in the eyes of the goddess to make it this far, but your training is just beginning. I'll be keeping a close eye on you throughout the years to come, helping to hone you into the fine generation of soldiers that you have the potential to become. The final arbiter of your success, however, is the Chancellor."
He turned his head right, gesturing at a short, portly woman in a business coat and trousers. Not military. Interesting.
"Chancellor Wallace will explain the rest."
A brief introduction. Good. I can't stand long speeches. The other students in the crowd had gone silent, turning their eyes to the stand. The Vice Chancellor stepped away from the podium, allowing Chancellor Wallace to approach. It occurred to me that no one was applauding. Were we supposed to cheer or clap? I wasn't really sure.
"Good morning, students, and thank you for the introduction, Commander Bennett."
She nodded to the Vice Chancellor and then looked back to the crowd.
"My, there are a lot of you this year. A record number, in fact. That's a good sign. A sign of the goddess watching over us. She seems to expect great things of you, and so will I. Before we continue, let us say a few words in her praise. Please join me in the hymn of accord."
I suppressed the urge to roll my eyes, mouthing the words as others droned one of the many hymns that had been scratched into our brains since childhood. "Goddess great, goddess high, watching from the distant sky, give us peace, give us strength, watch us live, watch us fly." I'd always thought "die" would have been more symmetry in the last line, but when I'd brought it up to my parents, they'd accused me of being needlessly fatalistic. There was a moment of silence as we finished the awkward recitation. Then the Chancellor continued her speech.
"Very good! Now, on to a bit more about the school. First and foremost, the role of this university is to prepare you for the dangers you will be facing in the future. A key component of this is learning proper discipline."
Chancellor Wallace made a broad gesture to encompass the entirety of the gathered student base.
"This year, I am not only welcoming the next generation of promising candidates from our own nation, but a number of transfer students from our friends and allies in other nations. I would like to be among the first to welcome you all to Velia. And I would also like to assure you that this academy holds all students to equal standards. There will be no favoritism toward local students."
The Chancellor's eyes narrowed as she glanced around.
"I would also like to remind our local students that these transfer students are our honored guests, and they must be treated with the utmost civility. Actions taken against other students based on their home nation will not be tolerated.
outright hostility toward our guests will result in punishment up to and including expulsion. I would like to make absolutely certain this is clear. If you understand me, reply, yes, ma'am. There was an awkward and out-of-sync reply of, yes, ma'am, from the audience. I couldn't hear you all. Repeat after me. Yes, ma'am. We did a little better job at replying in sync that time. I could see the reasoning behind introducing this policy so early. My father had told me a story about an incident last year where an Edrian student had been beaten half to death after a class where he'd made a remark about how Edria had won the war against Velia years ago. When my father had explained it, he'd said the kid had gotten what he deserved for speaking against our noble nation. I felt sick just remembering the talk. Who could justify beating a student just for stating an opposing viewpoint? Never mind the fact that Edria more or less had won the war, even if they hadn't conquered us. I shook my head, pushing the memory out of my mind. I'd do my best to try to be friendly to any Edrian students I encountered. I was pretty confident that the Chancellor's speech wasn't going to sway many others. The hatred for Edria was too deeply rooted into our culture, even many years after the war.
Good. There are a number of other rules at this university, each intended to help improve your discipline for your future career. You will find a full list of academy policies among your entry paperwork.
The Chancellor took a breath and then continued.
As this is your first year at Lorien Heights, each of you will be assigned to one of six divisions based on your attunement. Your division will determine the types of training and instruction you will be given, as well as your primary instructor and uniform.
Divisions? Interesting. I hadn't heard about this. Sarah and I will probably be split up. That could be good or bad.
Each division will have objectives throughout the year. Completing these objectives will earn points both for individuals and for their divisions. Each student has a minimum requirement to earn 500 points to continue to the second year at the academy. Candidates will enter their second year, retaining their scores from the first year, and graduates with high scores will enter their military service at a higher rank. A large part of your score is derived from the performance of your division, and thus it behooves you to work together with your classmates.
Chancellor Wallace gestured to a man in a gray suit with a sharp beard and salt-and-pepper hair. He stepped up to the front of the platform, coming in clear sight, but not near the podium.
Tiger Division specializes in offensive combat. Students with the Elementalist attunement will be assigned to him. Professor Saradan will be your supervisor.
Next, she waved to a woman in a black suit with perfectly straight shoulder-length black hair.
Professor Orden will be supervising Serpent Division, which specializes in reconnaissance. Students with the Shadow and Diviner attunements will report to her.
Professor Orden? Lyris Orden, I presume? I'll need to talk to her. A shame I'm not in her division. It sounds interesting, and being placed with her would be convenient. Chancellor Wallace pointed to a man in a purple suit with a dueling cane and carefully sculpted eyebrows.
Students with the Shaper attunement will report to Lord Teft and focus their studies on personal combat. He oversees Hydra Division.
I started hearing students leaning over and whispering to each other, discussing their division assignments, but Sarah and I remained quiet, focused. Neither of us had been assigned yet. I recognized the next person who stepped forward. She was the teacher who'd helped me with my paperwork after I'd first earned my attunement.
Phoenix Division provides valuable support both on and off the battlefield. Students with the Mender and Enchanter attunements will report to Professor Edlin.
Welp, stuck with the healers. I'm pretty much doomed to obscurity. Sarah must have seen my expression. She gave me a condescending look and a pat on the arm. The Chancellor beckoned to a thin man in a dark blue military uniform, similar to the one the Vice Chancellor wore.
Lieutenant Talon will oversee Tortoise Division. Tortoise Division focuses on defensive combat and battlefield control. Summoners and Guardians will report to this division. Transfer students with attunements from the other towers will be assigned an appropriate division for their specialization. For example, Soul Blades will be assigned to Tortoise Division due to sharing similar combat capabilities to summoners.
Huh. I'd known we had some foreign students, but I hadn't really considered that they might have taken their judgments at other towers and earned different attunements. It'd be interesting to see what kind of